Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast. As you can see from the title, today's podcast is a guest episode featuring one of my good buddies, Joseph Green. He is a stand-up comedian, writer, all-around top bloke, kind soul. I'm going to say poet slash model. I don't think he's ever done any poetry, but he just gives off that vibe. He's genuinely one of the best blokes I've ever met in this industry. We met literally like when I just started. I think it was like my fifth gig. We're going to talk about that, so I won't spoil it. But yeah, Joseph has been a guest I've wanted to have on this podcast for ages. I just wanted you guys to get to know Joseph as well. So finally it's happened. He's still got a show on at the moment as we speak at the Comedy Festival in Melbourne. He's at 10:30 p.m. at Hairy Little Sister near the Town Hall. So I'd highly recommend you go check him out. It's a great show. And if you saw me in Melbourne at the Comedy Festival, you would have seen Joseph Green opening for me every single night. And he crushed it every single night. And yeah, so this is one of my favorite episodes. It's the longest episode, I think, of the podcast ever, but I didn't want to edit it at all because it's great chat and it's all gold, okay? So enjoy this. Here's a little teaser of some of Joseph's stand-up. He's a storyteller, just to give you the kind of vibe. Here's a little clip, either audio or video, depending on where you're consuming the podcast. Because if you're listening on iTunes, this podcast is a video podcast now on YouTube as well. So yeah, here is a little clip of Joseph doing his thing. And yeah, enjoy the episode, guys. I'll give a full debrief of how the Comedy Festival went in next week's podcast, because I still am letting it sink in at the amount of support that you guys show me. I ended up selling 9 out of 12 shows out, which is crazy. So I'll talk about it next week, but in short, pretty much thank you so much to every single person who came and checked out the show. It's a dream come true, and I can't thank you guys enough. So enjoy the episode with Joseph Green, and here's a little clip of Joseph doing his thing on stage.
With my dad recently, and it was great to see him because I hadn't seen him for quite a long time. He invited me over to his house for dinner, and we'd had a fight the last time we spoke. And I said, yeah, I'd love to come over for dinner. And then when I got to his house, he said, do you want to stay and watch a film? I said, I'd love that. And we watched Gangs of New York. I don't know if you guys have seen the film. It's got Leonardo DiCaprio, Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a beautiful film. And there's a scene halfway through the film where these two actors are talking about the father and son relationship, forgiveness and reconciliation. And during the scene, my dad turned to me and he put out his hand. He said, I love you, Joseph. And I said, I love you too, Dad. And I put my hand in his hand and we just sat there holding hands, enjoying that moment together. And then the next scene was a sex scene between DiCaprio and Cameron Diaz. And me and my dad are still sitting there holding hands. Now I'm ready to let go. I start to feel my dad's hand start to sweat. I mean, nothing really prepares you for the awkward sexual tension between a father and a son. And then the first line of the scene, Leonardo DiCaprio whispers in Cameron Diaz's ear, oh yeah, who's your daddy? And my daddy squeezed my hand. And I squeezed my daddy's hand. Then he turned to me and he smiled and went, oh, that'd be me.
Welcome to chapter 81 of Memoirs of Two White Guys. Because today I'm joined by my good buddy, Joseph Green.
Thanks for having me, Luke Kittrell.
Mate, welcome to the show. I've been wanting to have Joseph on for ages now.
Yeah.
Joseph is one of my oldest buddies from stand-up comedy. We met, I would say my fifth gig.
Was it?
Because it was the night that all my mates like came and no one told me. So one of my mates was coming to Station 59.
Yeah.
It's like this dingy old pub in Church Street in Richmond, yeah, in Melbourne. And it was like this open mic night on a Wednesday. And I told one of my mates, I just started doing stand-up. And I was like, yeah, man, come along after work. And Stefan was like, yeah, great, I'm going to come. And then I rock up and there's like 10 of my mates in the audience. And I'm just like, this is bullshit. He's told everyone.
Oh, really? You had no idea that?
No, I was pissed off because I sucked.
I never knew that.
Yeah,
that was a great night.
I had an alright set, but I mean, for someone who's doing their fifth set, it was okay.
Yeah.
Now, looking back on it, I didn't know what I said. It was terrible. But
you had a lot of love in the room, though.
It was. And yeah, and that was the first night that all my mates watched me. And that was the first night that I met Joseph Gray. Yep. So it was a momentous occasion for me in my stand-up career.
The feeling's mutual.
And Joseph was one of my, I would say one of the first people who ever liked me while doing stand-up comedy.
Well, I was one of the first people you ever met, so it's just a matter of time before other people would meet you and like you. So.
Nah, but you're still one of my only friends in the No, I have lots of friends in the stand-up scene, but like I feel like I only hang out with like a few people outside stand-up regularly, and you'd be one of them.
Well, it's a privilege.
And would you say it's an unlikely friendship?
Guess so, but like, All friendships are unlikely in the whole scheme of the cosmos and the universe, aren't they?
That's what I mean, because you regularly use vocabulary like cosmos, and I'm never using that shit.
But it's, I don't know.
You used to be a yoga instructor. I would say you're the most spiritual person I know.
Am I?
I mean, I don't know many people who are spiritual.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm spiritual. I don't know. People's... Yeah, I guess I just... I don't know how to answer that or what to say to that. I've been like having an awareness of us being, this isn't very funny, but you know, just spiritual beings. Sorry,
this podcast is never very funny.
I mean,
it's usually me talking, so it's not great.
Yeah, what can we say about our spirituality other than that we're just light beams inhabiting these bodies?
See?
Man, I didn't really talk like this. I'm just playing the fucking stereotype that he's set up.
No, so Joseph is a stand-up comedian. Obviously, I've said that. He's doing a show at the moment at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great show. I've seen it twice now.
Thank you.
And each time it's evolved from the second one.
It's changed a lot, yeah.
And also, if you went and saw my show, which just finished last night, so you missed out now, if you didn't come, yeah, you would have seen Joseph Green opening for me.
You would have, because I was there every night.
And smashing it every night. And a lot of people from my show came to check out your show.
Man, I appreciate that a lot. Thank you to you, and thank you to everyone from Luke's show.
Mate, don't thank me. Thank them, okay?
I'm thanking them now. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and so how's the show been going?
It's been great. It's changed a lot, as we touched upon.
Mm-hmm.
Should I talk about why?
Yeah, tell them why.
Okay.
It's really interesting, because your show is now almost completely different from where it started.
Yeah, so the... my girlfriend started going out with a guy who's also a comedian who I liked a lot.
And but not girlfriend at the time.
No. She started going out with this guy after we stopped going out. And I love this comedian. And I didn't mention his first name on stage on one of the second or third night.
It was me. No.
And it was Emily. Yeah, she broke my heart.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a 3 to 4 minute bit within the show.
Yeah.
And the subtext of everything I said about him is my admiration and affection. And this reviewer reviewed the show on a great night. There was like 65 people there and the show went well. And he said that I used this opportunity to like attack this more successful and famous stand-up comedian. And then his management contacted the festival and contacted him, who contacted the woman and who contacted me, and everyone was not very happy with me because they made it sound like I was hating on this guy when I really wasn't. And it was just an important part of the show and the story within the show.
I didn't think, I saw the show before it got reviewed, and it didn't come across to me as like it was against the guy.
Yeah.
It came across like you were... It was almost ironic. It was just more you were pointing at how ironic it was that your ex-girlfriend at the time had started dating another comedian that you've always admired.
Yeah.
And then people were like, oh, Joseph, there's no way she's funnier than you and stuff. Because you're a very funny man. And all the other comedians were like, oh, there's no way people are... there's no way he's funnier than me. Who is it? And then you told them the name of the comedian. And people are like, oh yeah, he is. Funny.
He's great. He's brilliant. Yeah. He's been doing it for over 10 years.
I would say the bit is the irony of like, damn, like my girlfriend moved on to someone bigger and better than me in the field that I am.
Yeah,
that was the joke.
And also that, as a spoiler alert for the show, I guess, is that another ex-girlfriend of mine started going out with this other dude that I looked up to, a guy called Jason Silver, who's like, I guess he's a self-help guru.
See?
Online.
That's what I mean.
They're like, both of those, the comedian and Jason Silver, they're both like different versions of me.
See, it's funny because...
Further down the track, that have gone out with women that I loved. And that happened within this, like within a month of each other, that I both saw these people going out. And,
you know, guys, but it's so weird that you have like, you look up to self-help gurus, like professional ones. Because like, you're like my self-help guru. Like, you're the person who I looked up to. And then if you started dating my girlfriend, I'd be like, fuck, this
That's
is brutal.
That would be so dark.
Because like, I don't follow like those people, like inspirational speakers or whatever.
Well, I kind of loosely follow. I probably exaggerate a little bit for the story. But the comedian one is definitely more visceral and authentic, I guess. But yeah,
so you got like a review that then it wasn't great, but that's
I mean, you can say a bad review, that's fine, but it said that I used the whole hour to attack this guy, which is like not representative of the spirit of the show.
No. Yeah. And because it's like a 4 minute bit of the show. But then since then you've had to change the show and it's evolved and now it's more about. And now you've also added a bit, which I like at the end, about getting the review. And are you still doing that?
Yep.
Because you got like a week
to go. Gary Ablett as well?
Yeah, the Gary Ablett
thing. That's evolved a lot of it.
Yeah. Go see his show to see what we're talking about. We won't give too much away. But you've been... If you don't like understand, like some people like always go on my podcast like, man, Luke works so hard. Like he does radio show, does all this stuff. And people are like, it's so cool, man. You're inspiring. Joseph has done like how many gigs now during just the comedy festival? 3 weeks, you've done about 40 gigs.
It's in my diary because I've got.
You've done about 40 spots around Melbourne.
I think during the festival I might have done 40. Where are we? April 15th?
He hustles, ladies and gentlemen. It's crazy. Do you keep a tally of it or something?
I've done, since the start of the comedy festival, I've done 45. Spots.
45 gigs in 3 weeks. I've done 13.
Really?
Yeah, I did one more that wasn't my show. I did 12 shows.
I've gone to 60 shows since the start of the comedy festival.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Man, see? He hustles, alright?
Well, we're all hustling here in different ways.
Well, yeah, but not really. We stopped doing radio. We went to radio once a week. Man, during the day, I've just been like working on my show. Sleeping.
But I feel like to come up with ideas is such a nebulous...
True, it's just like staring at a wall for 3 hours.
You do need to do a lot of nothing sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the nothingness is where inspiration...
I don't know, sometimes I put my feet up and I'm like, what a big day that was. That was a huge day of just thinking.
You have to. You have to have those times.
Well, because I feel like my show evolved not as much as yours. My show evolved in the sense that by the end, like I felt like the last night... So the first night was the weakest the show ever was, and the last night of the show, which was last night, was the strongest.
Which was the weakest?
The first night.
The first night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't know the order of some of the bits, I was like occasionally checking my set list like, oh, yep, so guys, I do this. Like, but then last night, it was just bang, 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 and I felt comfortable with it, and it was good.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was better. The last few shows felt way, way stronger than all last year's shows. Like, even the best show from last year. Like, Sydney from last year was a banger.
The best show... What are you saying? The best show of last year wasn't as strong as the weakest this year?
No, like, the best show of last year was, like got shat on by this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. That's awesome.
Just because I think I've gotten better.
Yeah, of course. That's what you want.
I mean, you'd want it in a year of doing something.
Yeah, every year you'd want that to happen.
So, now the show's ready to take it to around the country, which is cool. And you've done some gigs interstate. You usually do Adelaide Fringe and Perth Fringe.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
Didn't do it this year. Took a year off.
I did from Adelaide and Perth, but I'll be there soon.
But yeah, if you're ever in Perth and Adelaide and go to the Fringe, go check out my boy Joseph.
Thank you. Yeah.
He's a very funny man. All right, is there anything else we needed to discuss?
What else, man? What's been going on?
I wanted to discuss. More just how you find performing to my audience each night, because it's kind of different because they're younger.
They are. Because usually you get some older people as well.
I do. Yeah. I do get like... I would say it's mainly a younger demographic though.
Yeah, it is.
Like mainly people under
25. I'll tell you the thing. So I've got that anal beads joke. I've noticed that like...
Oh, they love it because you say anal beads.
But they don't it's like, already funny. The actual punchline, they aren't on as bored with.
Because they don't understand... So, I don't think many people from my generation know what beads are, like Catholic beads.
Well, yeah, rosary beads.
Yeah.
So you can see in the way an audience reacts, there are things in Catholicism called rosary beads.
Yeah.
That you use to pray with the rosary.
Yeah.
And I grew up a Catholic, and I have.
Is the bit on your Facebook page?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it would be. Yeah. Yeah.
Go watch it
somewhere. But when. The punchline, you need to know what rosary beads are, I guess, to...
Well, yes, because it's a play on words that his mum is Catholic and she's discovering anal beads for the first time in the story.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't even know what anal beads are, which is already funny.
Yeah.
The
joke would get, like, bigger laughs at different points with your audience.
Audience, yeah.
Like, in the middle of it, I would say... My mum would say, oh, anal beads aren't a real thing after we saw someone talk about them at a comedy show.
Yeah.
And I would say, they are, mum. I'll prove it to you. And I go to pull out my phone, but it looks like I could be pulling them out of my own ass.
People, the idea of Joseph pulling anal beads out of his asshole on stage is apparently funnier to my audience
than the
main punchline.
That's the peak of the bit.
I know.
Which is why...
It's not usually, though.
I know.
And I find it happens with some of my jokes, because obviously Joseph and I, we gig a few times a week just around comedy clubs and, you know, little open mic rooms in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing bits all year that they're crushing, like, to 40-year-old, 50-year-old people, because those are the people that hang out at bars on Thursday nights. It's like 30-year-old people who have just recently in a relationship, and they're like, oh, we should go out for a drink on a Thursday. Yeah. And those are people I'm used to performing to. So then when you perform to, like, I guess people who are just out of high school, or some people still in high school, they just laugh at people pulling out anal beads.
Yeah.
And you don't expect that.
Well, how do you find, you know, with your own audience, because most of the time you're working on material, you're doing it to these late 20s, 30s, 40-year-old people, but then
your main demographic
is much younger.
Well, I changed some of it for the show. Like, for example, I have a bit about going to 21st. I don't want to spoil it because I still got some shows to go interstate. But, like...
My landlord just...
Landlord's just walking in. Howdy. Yeah. Oh, he's got a nice helmet on.
He does. Cute little bike helmet. He's got a Vespa.
Yeah. Anyway, so... What was I talking about?
You're talking about the 21st bit?
Oh, yeah. So, for your audience. Like, that 21st bit crushes everywhere. Like, the Comics Lounge, you know, like, to people, because everyone in that room it's 18 plus, firstly, usually most of the rooms we do.
Yeah.
So everyone has been to a Greek 21st before.
Yeah.
And I think some of the times, like, I'm doing it in front of my crowd, and only, like, half the crowd has been in that situation. Yeah. Some people might be 17 going, like, yeah, this is funny, but, like, I've never been to a Greek 21st.
Yes. Because
my friends aren't 21.
Yeah.
And I only discovered this when I turned 21, so I wouldn't have even found it funny 4 years ago.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, you do have to change, and then you got to put other jokes in there that everyone can appreciate.
Yeah.
Because
I'd seen you do that at the Comics Lounge.
Yeah, and it gets, like, an applause at the Comics Lounge.
Oh, it'd been... Like, going a lot better at the Comics Lounge. Yeah,
it's probably usually my best bit.
Yeah.
And one of my better bits. And in my show, I don't think it's people to leave the show going, oh, that 21st bit, though.
Yeah.
And I was, like, real confident going, it was the first bit I wrote in this year's show. It was the first bit I came up with, and then...
What do you think that is?
I don't think they've been to 21st before.
Yeah, they're young. Would you say most of your fans are under 21?
I would say half of them are either 21 or younger.
Yeah.
So, and the ones that are 21 and over, I love it, but it's often not the whole audience. So half the audience is like, this is good, kind of.
Yeah.
But, for example, then are some of the other bits that don't go as well at the Comics Lounge and stuff like that. Like, I have bits about, like, jacking off and watching porn and all this stupid shit that I kind of do occasionally at these gigs just to make sure it is funny before I put it in my show.
Yeah.
But it doesn't kill in front of, like, 40-year-old people, because, like, they're coming out, they're on a date, they're, like, three wines in, they're drinking expensive wine, and they've got a nice little cheese platter in front of them. They don't want a 22-year-old coming up there talking about jacking off on a Thursday, right? But like at my shows, man, that shit just crushes.
But the difference, also the difference between your shows and the Comic Sans is you do a bit of crowd work where you actually ask the audience.
That's true.
Are you guys like? Do you guys talk about what porn what you're
porn
into?
What you're into? Yeah.
Was it last night or the night before? Someone said Smurf porn.
Last night I said Smurf porn? I was like, who here talks about what kind of porn they watch with their friends?
Yeah.
And some guy just like goes, yeah, like straight up at the back, which is also creepy.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what's the worst thing you've ever watched? Just like on the internet. And he's like, he didn't have to think about it. It was like Smurf porn. Like, is that just like a cartoon?
You know this? Do you know the Smurfs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said, do they jizz blue? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then, for about 2 minutes, I just started talking about Smurf porn, which never happens in Brunswick, like, 10:30 p.m. on a Monday night. I don't usually start riffing on.
He did. He said they can't. They come blue.
But that's what you got to pay for, ladies and gentlemen. That's where you got to pay the big bucks, all right? You got to get the good Smurf porn stuff at the show. But that's what sets apart the shows for me, which is way more fun for me on stage, because it's people who are like, we want to hear about Smurf porn. Yeah. Not even that, like, we want to hear you talk about Smurf porn.
Well, I could tell that from the first night that they wanted to like be engaged in a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And that makes it a lot more
I think I did some of the best crowd work I've ever done during this year's festival.
Oh,
definitely. And I wasn't even necessarily going for it. I was just, you know, it was just in between bits. I like making the audience feel involved, but otherwise I feel like everyone's just sitting there staring at me.
The King, ladies and gentlemen, Luke Kitchell. King crowd work. National crowd work tour coming up.
Actually, you know who... You did, like, I've never seen you doing crowd work before. Like, you rarely do it.
I'm no crowd work king like this
bloke. He's a storyteller. Fuck off. You're a storyteller, right? You spin a yarn like no one else.
I'm a yarnsman. Yes. That's
what you don't really have any jokes.
I have zero jokes. If you've been watching this going, this guy's not very funny, that's because I've got zero jokes.
He just tells great stories.
Oh, thanks.
But they're funny, very funny stories.
Thanks.
With punchlines in the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, I forgot what I was saying. No, I've lost my
joke. You're winding up. I'm like, Luke looks like he's low.
I had something great
to
say.
Was it something about your national crowd work tour?
Oh yeah, just like Todd Barry. So there's an American comedian called Todd Barry. He's got a special on Netflix. I think he's got two, but one of the specials on Netflix is quite phenomenal. He just went around America and did an hour of crowd work a night. It was called the Crowd Work Tour.
Yeah,
and he didn't have any material and just went up on stage and for an hour was like, "Where are you from? What do you do?"
Oh, he's great.
It's so weird though.
Yeah,
I don't even know if I'd want to see that.
I would fit. To see
for something different, but not.
But I'm a big Todd Barry fan, so I feel like that's why your fans, they like want to come and see you. So it doesn't really matter as much when people like want to see a person perform.
They don't really care what I say. They just like, as long as it's funny, as long as it's good.
Yeah, man. It's like if I wanted to see Paul McCartney, I'm like.
If I go see Paul McCartney, I want to see him play Penny Lane, Let It Be, and all the fucking hits.
Yeah, but do it. If
I don't want to see him talk to the crowd.
But would you be angry if he was here in this room now?
I don't want to see Paul McCartney talking about Smurf porn, alright?
Would you be angry if he didn't sing those songs, but you still got to chat about Smurf porn? If you got to have a conversation with Paul McCartney about Smurf porn, I reckon you'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, because you'd be like, how the fuck did this guy get knighted? Yeah. How is this guy a Beatle? Now he's just like, what's happened?
Let it be,
like,
baby.
Ringo Starr's not talking about Smurf porn.
What is he? He's a spiritual... I mean, they're all spiritual people. We all are spiritual people.
Mate, we've all heard the bloody... What was the Cooked album? Sergeant Pepper's?
No, it was the
Strawberry...
Strawberry Fields.
Strawberry Fields album. Yeah. Man, that was Cooked.
That was a great album.
They were very spiritual then.
You didn't like that album?
Mate, that album sounds like how LSD must feel, because they were on it.
Are you into?
I'm more into like Sgt. Pepper's The White Album.
Oh, great!
Abbey Road. Like,
I didn't know you're so down with the Beatles history.
Mate, I used to be in a band. Okay, I used to be like a muso.
Oh, you did.
And
as
now
well.
I'm like, what's a comedian version of that? A comic.
A comic.
Or I was about to say a Komodo.
Komodo.
No, that's a lizard, guys.
Is it what a Komodo?
Komodo dragon. No, because Muzo is it a comedian.
A Pokemon.
Is it?
I don't know.
It sounds like a Pokemon. A Muzo also sounds like a sad Pokemon with a side fringe.
Yeah. It does.
Anyway, yes, I know a lot about the Beatles' history.
Great.
Yeah. People always get surprised because I'm young and I guess I wasn't alive when they were around.
Are your parents in
the Beatles? My dad, yeah. So yeah, dad has given me music education. His favourite band is the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
So he was probably like, for a bit of his life was, nah, because for a bit it was the Beatles or the Rolling Stones.
That's the same with my dad.
Yeah.
Growing up, we used to wear like, hold the bloody tennis racket and golf clubs and sing A Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
All the kids in our family. We'd...
So was he a Rolling Stones man over the Beatles?
He was probably more Beatles when we were kids.
Yeah.
Like, we got exposed to more Beatles. Then a lot of Bob Dylan and also the Stones.
Yeah.
But then I did a modelling job. This is getting a bit boastful now.
Nah, he's a model, by the way. I didn't say that at the start. Okay. Stand-up comedian and model. You might have seen him on a tram around Melbourne recently. The Viking Museum exhibition ad. It's literally just Joseph's head covering half a tram. I saw one the other day on Exhibition Street, and I sent Joseph a photo. I was like, hey, man, you're making it. This is great promo for your comedy festival show. And then you were like, wait, what the fuck? That wasn't in the contract.
I know, and I feel like such an arsehole. What a thing to complain about. Like, oh no, take my face down from the tram.
Right? Yeah, I know, you like my face.
My face doesn't belong on that tram.
It's never been on a billboard or a tram, and if it would, it'd mean I'm paying like $3,000 for it to be there.
I know, I feel like I...
And anyway. You were like, oh my god, take that down. He literally, before we started the podcast, sent like a cease and desist letter to the company.
I did, a letter of demand. They said it was going to finish at a certain date, and they weren't good for that. So,
and he wants his face off that tram. He doesn't need the extra promo.
Well, it's good. I don't know if it helps the comedy festival.
No, it doesn't.
One person did say to my sister, like, gee, he's got a huge budget for his comedy festival promo.
It's like, no, your show is not about Vikings.
I know.
Why would your comedy festival show be about you dressed as a Viking?
It could be. You know, people have themed shows sometimes.
And the theme of yours this year is... Well, it's called A Dreamer Examines His Pillow.
The theme is love, ladies and gentlemen. The theme is love. What else is there to talk about?
My theme was Smurf porn this year. I only really nailed the theme in the final night when someone else organically brought it up.
Smurf porn is it's a particular strain of love as well.
But as soon as someone did talk about Smurf porn and bring it up organically, I felt like that was the theme I've been striving for the whole festival, and it didn't hit it till the last night. what were we talking about? The Beatles.
I don't want to make it sound like I brought up my modelling just...
Oh, yeah.
It sounded like I did that just like...
You did.
By the way, I'm a model, let's move on. But the reason I was bringing up being a model is because I did a job...
I've got so many Joseph modelling stories,
In Paris with a guy called Marlon Richards, who's Keith Richards' son.
Oh, so now you're name-dropping as well. Guys, he's a model and he knows Keith Richards' son. Whatever, all right? We get it. If we all know people, all right? I can start name-dropping here. I met Reese Maston once. What are you going to do about it?
Where's this guy...
Where's the story going?
Well, it's a story about stories where I'm kind of name dropping, I guess, in the story. But the thing is, when this guy would tell stories, they weren't great stories, but they had so many great names in them that like people would love them. So we'd be around on set, and they'd be like, oh, "Excuse me, Marlon, tell us about what is it like when you were growing up? Is it very interesting? Was it rock and roll? Tell us how it was." And
why was he talking like that?
No, this was in Paris.
Oh, right.
So a lot of the crew
were
Parisian.
Right. I thought you meant Marlon Richards was...
No, Marlon Richards,
dude, he's British.
I know, and he was like, oh, it's pretty, orange stuff, my dad was very cool, so you'd get to meet some cool people, like sometimes at our house in the Alps, like it'll just be Dad and Bobby De Niro smoking a joint and me and just cool times,
Who's Bobby De Niro?
Robert De Niro.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, the story's like... And that's the story. And it's not like a great story, but it's it's
how chill he was about
that. It's got Keith Richards and Robert De Niro in it.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, oh my god, this is so cool. This is amazing. So yeah, the name dropping, when you do it in like a cool way, can just like...
So what just happened there was Joseph name dropped Keith Richards' son name-dropping Robert De Niro. And now if I retell this story to someone, it's me name-dropping Joseph, name-dropping Keith Richards' son name-dropping Robert De Niro. So technically, me and Robert De Niro kind of go way back now. Which is great. But man, Joseph modeling stories. I love the fact that you're a model. One time, I opened my... This is no joke. I opened my letterbox at home, and I pull out a Giorgio Armani catalogue, and it's just... Joseph on every single page in different coloured suits, just like modelling, and I started losing my shit, and I was like, because I'd seen you the night before, and I was like, well, he's this handsome boy. Then I started taking pictures, started putting Snapchat filters over it. I mean, what are you gonna do?
What can I do? What can I say to that?
You gotta hustle. You gotta make that Giorgio Armani money.
It just gives me more time to sit at home and jerk around and.
Yes.
Think of something to say for the evening.
Would you say you're 30% model, 70% comedian?
Oh, fuck you, man.
That's like when people go like, would you say you're 90% YouTuber, 10% comedian?
Do people say that to you?
No.
Has anyone ever said that
to you? I did fucking, I was turned around, man. I did Central Coast brekkie with Akmal and Mandy the other morning on the Central Coast. They have a breakfast radio show, and I was driving in listening to it on the stream because obviously I can't tune in my car.
Yeah.
So I had the stream for their thing going in. I was driving in and they were like, oh, and coming up from the 8th hour, we're joining up by YouTuber Luke Kidgel. So he's big on YouTube. He's going to be doing... And then the direct quote was, he's going to be doing YouTube on the radio. And I almost fucking pulled a U-turn on Hoddle Street, man. I was like, you're...
Did you talk about that on the show?
Well, yeah, then they came on and were like, YouTuber, and they're like, how many likes do you have? Like, they're asking me that. And I was like, trying to make jokes about it, and I was like, oh, you know, like, he's got 300,000 likes, and I was like, ah, like 20,000 are from the Philippines, like, haha, don't, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And I was like, to them in the song, I was like, hey, just let you know, like, I do radio, like, they were broadcasting out of my studio. I'm like, dude, I do radio here, like, full time, and I do gigs, I'm doing the comedy festival. Like,
yeah.
I would say I do radio 4 times a week. I do stand up 4 times a week, and I do a vid sometimes once a week.
Yeah.
So and but people mainly, I guess it's fair enough though, because the majority of people just see the video because the videos get heaps of views.
Yeah.
So compared to how many people, only about 10% of people who watch my videos come see my live show.
That's still quite a lot, given how many people.
But that's just of my subscriber base.
Yeah.
Like, judging by the people who see it, I would say 2% come see my...
But then you just have people
which
like...
Which is why people know you as a YouTuber, which is fair enough.
Sometimes people just came to watch it because it was a comedy festival as well. Like, there was some...
I don't think I get many. Americans? Yeah, I had some American girls the first night who were like... I started talking to the crowd and I couldn't work out why the fuck they had an accent.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. That's like, they're so... Like I couldn't even fathom that there'd be a foreign person at my show. I was just like, who are these people? I usually just speak to, like, teenage bogans like me.
Yeah.
Just like, why? Because, you know what's so weird? After the show, I had this bit at the end of my show. I won't give it away, but it's about, I make jokes about Assyrians, right? And they're pretty, like, it's pretty racist, right? That's borderline. It's racist.
Your jokes, I've noticed,
are racist.
Well, you say they're racist when they're not really racist. There's
the Syrian one's pretty.
There's
racist.
An earlier like I don't want to.
Yeah, the nursery rhyme bit.
Yeah, like the way you say "row row row your boat" one.
Yeah,
that's not necessarily racist, unless
well, it is. But
unless
I
you think... are racist and interpret it as being racist.
Yeah, true.
Because you're doing it from the government's perspective.
I know, but I wrote it. I still wrote that and was like, "That's funny." And then I added the government
but,
bit.
But
before
you,
it.
But you wrote it from like
so
this
I,
is the government
a,
writing.
There's a bit in my show where I say. This, I don't want to give too much away, but it goes, written in, this next one is written and authorised by the Australian government, Canberra, and then I just say something really racist.
Are you a racist?
No. You know what I mean, though?
But that's the point.
But, like, no, but that was like 2 months where I was just doing the joke with like, I wrote this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never saw you do that. I'm sure I never saw
but
you
But it was doing well, and it bothered me.
Oh,
and
I
was
really?
Because like, it was not that racist. It's more poking fun. It's so obvious that I'm poking fun, not at the people who are at the expense.
You're poking fun at the government.
I'm poking fun at the government's policy against refugees. Yeah. That's the joke.
That's very clear.
But I poke fun at it by pretending I'm from the government's point of view. So,
but then you say, this is racist. There's something on you. Just look at me. Just show this, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they could see that.
No, they probably couldn't. But... Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, if they could, it might have been bothering someone online, and they'd be like, "Fuck, I'm glad. I just wanted to reach in there."
got that off Luke's face. It was jizz. No, it's Smurf. To my Smurf point.
I gave there was a guy in the city the other night who had a free hug sign, and I was with.
I would never touch them.
I ordinarily wouldn't. I was with this woman called Hanan Aslan from Malaysia, very funny comic who we'll actually see later tonight.
Okay,
and she's like, "Yeah, I'll give you a hug." And she, like, hugged him. And then I hugged him as well because I was like, oh, we're all doing it. I'll do it. And I must have just unconsciously held my breath. But I thought, oh, it was fine. It was fine hug as far as stranger hugs go. And I was like, what did you think? How was your hug? She's like, oh, my God, Joseph. His whole face smelled like calm.
So a guy giving out free hugs. Face smelt like cum.
Yeah.
How'd your face smell
that's
like cum?
That's what I said. She was like, oh, it mustn't have been his face. It must have just been his breath.
Oh, that's even worse. I'd rather cum on my chin than cum on my tongue.
That's a good one. Call in.
131060. Would you rather cum on your chin
or cum on your tongue?
This is why I wish we had a phone line for the podcast. That was just like Joe Rogan. Just... live stream.
Does he have a...
Well, he live streams his podcast now, I think.
But he doesn't have phone-ins.
No, but people just... Mate, if I said... If right now, if a million people watching and I said I would rather cum on my chin,
or
the comment section would light up about what people would rather. But right now, it'll just light up in people's minds going, I would rather cum on my chin, actually.
Yeah, just
even,
on your chin.
Like, no matter what gender, no matter what sexuality you are, I think every human being on the planet would rather come on their chin than come in their tongue.
Well, mate, sometimes you might want it on your tongue.
Depends, it's situational. It's
Everyone
has a different perspective, that's just my personal perspective.
Yeah, I would probably prefer the chin as well, but that's not to disregard the other people who would prefer the tongue.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with come on your tongue. Alright, let's move on, guys.
Yeah.
It's becoming immature, it's becoming like my show last night. Alright.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Smurf porn?
I was pretty sure it was just you modelling.
No, it was you being a YouTuber
or
a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess the resentment you can sometimes feel when people try to pigeonhole you.
Yes, because I pigeonholed you as a model. Yeah.
Well, you as a percentile, you're like, you would say 70% comedian.
I was joking.
30% model.
You literally spend 99% of your time doing comedy.
But this... yeah, it's a strange thing to try and like... would you identify yourself as?
Just comedian.
Yeah.
Because I was doing stand-up before videos.
Yeah.
I mean, I was doing videos in high school with my friends, but then I started stand-up at the same time I started putting videos online. I was just like... At the time when I started videos, my goal
Sorry, my blanket's falling down. We're filming this on my bed, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, it's like a bed couch.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the time when I started, my intention was never become a YouTuber. Like, I wasn't even into YouTubers. I was into comedians on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I was into, like, Alex Williamson, Elliot Loney, Lewis, kind of, like... I was like, I watched Lewis's stuff and but I wasn't like religiously watch Lewis's stuff. He knows that. But yeah, and I used to just watch like Troy Kinney.
Yeah.
So like comedians on YouTube was my like what I was into, but I was never into like people playing video games
How long have you been into comedians on YouTube?
Like, not long. Like, just in high school, kind of, like, my mates were into it. Like, my mates were like, oh, have you seen this guy? And, like, they showed me Elliot and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's funny. Like, and then I started. And then I saw, like, Alex Williamson's Loosest Aussie Bloke thing. Like, the one that went viral and it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy's hilarious. Yeah. And then I started doing sketches and stuff. But my stuff wasn't similar to that, really. I was just doing weird shit in high school. Like, we're doing weird character stuff. If you go down, one of the first videos on my channel is me and my high school mates
pretending to be in a British boy band
called
The Lonely Hearts. And me and Tyler, you know Tyler, we recorded a song, like this fake song as this British boy band. Go check it out. It's still on my channel. It's public. And it's just like this fake parody song of this awful British boy band, like this parody boy band. And like we, like that's where I started. I was like, oh, that's funny. But, and I just
What's the song called?
It's called, I don't know, some fucking stupid, like My Love Humps or something. Lonely Hearts or something like some shit.
My Lonely Love Hump Hearts.
Oh, mate.
Luke Kitchell. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know if I should show you now. It's not a great podcast, but I'll show you after.
Go into the archives.
Yeah, it's been like, I had started with never the intention to become a YouTuber. I just was like, how can I make comedy on a different platform?
Yeah.
And then my original intention actually was to become a radio host.
Well, you've ticked the box, baby.
But then I fell into online stuff. Then I was like, oh, well, radio's never going to happen now. That's fine. I'm okay with that. Then I started a podcast. I was like, it's the same. I can say what I want.
But it happened pretty quick, man.
Well, yeah. Then luckily it did happen.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I used to do community radio before.
How long did you do community on Sin FM?
Yeah, I did it for about 6 months or so. We used to do graveyard shifts from like 2 to 6 a.m. 4 hours, man. Me and my mate, yeah, Marty, we used to, like, talk shit.
Why did you get given that time slot?
It was so fun. We asked to do it.
You asked to do that time slot?
Yeah. Well, dude, I loved it. I wanted to do it so bad.
That time? Specifically that time?
No, I just wanted to do any radio. Yeah. I was like, any type of comedy radio, I was like, I threw myself pretty hard at comedy. Like, the minute I decided to, obviously, I've told it many times before, the Nick Cody show, told my girlfriend, I'm like, I want to be a comedian. From then on, I was like, had it set.
Yeah.
That like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then I threw myself real hard.
Before that point, had you done any radio?
No.
Because I came on...
Yeah, you came on my show, so
on,
that was when
Sin
I
FM.
Just... Maybe I started radio before.
But that was between 2 and 4 a.m.
No, so then we got a... show on Monday nights from doing the graveyard shifts. We got like a weekly show on community radio.
Because it felt like it came at a fairly normal hour.
No. We did graveyards for about 2 months and then...
It's every night?
No, like once a week.
Once a week.
And then, and then we did... like this weekly show for like 10 weeks and then we did a few other fill-in spots and then that kind of died when I started to take stand-up more seriously and the guy I was doing it with wanted to do another degree. Like he was like, yeah, I want to focus on uni. Because like it's always a weird thing if you're like in a duo, both of you have to be like in it for the long haul. It's never going
to
work.
Yeah, you got to like, be... Yeah, both the level of commitment
Lewis and I feel like we match level of commitment.
Yeah.
Which is why it works. But at the time, like... he was like, yeah, I want to be an AFL umpire. And I was like, that's great. Like that.
Oh, your mate?
Yeah, Marty.
Who's that?
His name's Marty Roger. Excellent friend of mine. He came. He's still a good friend. He came to the show the other night.
Is he an AFL umpire?
VFL. Yeah, he does VFL.
Oh, great.
Like he's yeah, very, very...
Shout out to Marty. Yeah, I was also a VFL player.
You know, he's probably actually, in what he wanted to end up doing, like, and what I wanted to end up doing, he's probably, like, further ahead in his goals than I am at the time in mine.
Well, we both.
He's doing VFL and I'm doing Sunday nights on Fox, so it's about the same.
Dude, that's pretty... How is that less than VFL? You can't say that's less.
Well, AFL's like brekkie or drive, so I would say...
Man, I wouldn't even say... I feel like if you're in commercial radio, you're pretty much... If you're at AFL or umpiring...
Yeah.
Is maybe different because there's fewer spots.
I feel like... If you want to be an AFL umpire and you work hard at it, you could probably...
But now we're making it more prestigious to be an umpire than a player.
There's more people trying to get into radio than AFL umpiring, is my point.
That's true, but there's probably more people trying to get into AFL.
Oh, lots more people trying to play footy,
yeah.
Including me. But then I gave up in under-12s.
Yeah.
I broke my arm and then I went, guys, this isn't for me.
You never played past under-12s?
No, I played till under, like, 16s. But from under-12s, I was like, I don't think this is going to be my calling.
Yeah.
Because every year I come like fourth in the best and fairest, never like top three.
I'd play
Ruck Rover, but was never like the best in the team.
You're fourth, that's good. Do you have a good team?
Yeah, we won 2 flags. But in Division 3, so let's not brag about that.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't think, yeah.
But you, so that was how I started comedy. You started, pretty interesting, you started your first gig, was it with Tommy Little? So you started comedy, stopped, then started again.
Yeah, so tumultuous affair. I live in North Melbourne. I don't know if I should say this. But I live on Errol Street, which is the same street as the Comics Lounge. And
going to get stalky, that's where we are now.
And the first time...
someone just like knocking up.
When I signed up for my first spot, at that point you can't do this anymore really, but at that point you could just go to the Comics Lounge and be like, I want to do a gig. They'd be like, sure, come along. And when I did that...
Yeah, that's not how it worked for me. I went there and like introduced myself about 20 times, I think, before I got a spot.
Oh, and they love you now.
Yeah.
But yeah, you couldn't do that now. But back in the day, that's what I did. And the day I went to sign up was the day Tommy did his first spot.
Yeah, so Tommy Little, people might know, he's on the radio or whatever.
Yeah.
On Fox as well. So technically a colleague, although I don't see him.
Have you met him a few times?
Yeah, because I've done the Comics Lounge with him.
Oh, great, so that's
one,
right.
One week I was hosting when he was
and
on.
He did a spot, well. Yeah.
But yeah, Tommy's lovely. I love Tommy. He's a very, very kind boy.
He is. Also a model as well.
Also now a model. If you've checked out Tommy's Instagram, it's great stuff.
Yeah.
I would say, what do you reckon his percentage is? Like yours, 30%?
I would say he's tipped. He's more model than me now.
It's so weird because you're like really good friends with Tommy because you were neighbours with him for a bit.
Well, I wouldn't say really good, but we're like... We did start at the same
time. Sorry, I was trying to give him another chance to name drop, but he didn't take it.
No, well, I feel his name's already been dropped.
Yeah.
But I did... After I signed up, I started doing gigs, and he was doing gigs. And I guess he was similar to you in that, like, as soon as he started, like, from the very first gig, he was like, oh, I'm just all in with this comedy thing.
But that's, I feel like... I mean, because I'm like, you know, like, it was, like, 18 or 19 when I started. I think I was maybe 18. I don't know. I could have been just turned 19 when I started. I was like, oh, if this is going to work, this has got to have to work in the next... Well, like, I can give this 3 years and then my life isn't ruined. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, if this doesn't work out at all, that's fine. I can go back to uni and I can just live my life.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to give this everything for 3 years and I'm still in that stage. I think it's just 3 years now.
Well, I...
And I'm going to continue it, guys, because it's going all right.
You're having a good run.
Yeah, it's having a good run. But
Because since I came back to stand up...
Weird time to announce that I'm not quitting.
Great. Because it'd be... Because I started, I think, June 8th, 2015, when I really like...
So weird, because I started June 15th.
Really?
Yes.
We've never identified these.
Well, again, I met you fifth gig, and that must have been just when you started... doing it again.
Yeah. So I just finished a play at the time.
We would have met in like July.
Yeah.
Early July, probably.
Wow.
That year. Yeah, so I started June 2015 and at the Imperial was my first gig.
Was it really?
Yes.
On a Wednesday or Thursday?
I went there three times three times and signed up, and it was like draw out of a hat to see who gets on.
Yeah.
And I didn't get on for three times. And like with the first time you're doing a gig, it's like the hardest part's leaving the house, the train there, like mustering up the courage.
Of course, man.
So I mustered up the courage three times to leave the house and go.
Oh, it's agony.
Which is like the hardest part because I was so nervous the first time, and then each time I wouldn't get picked and I was like, oh, and I spent the whole day stressing about it for 3 weeks in a row.
I'm feeling bad just hearing it.
Yeah, and then I said to them, hey, I've come for 3 weeks. Would I be able to get on next week? And then they're like, yeah, sorry. Like, yeah, we'll put you on. And then next week I knew that I was definitely on. So then I was like, thought about it all week again. I actually intended to start in May.
Yeah.
But then it took me like a month to even get on stage.
Well, I would say to anybody who's intending or wanting to start stand-up, go to a open mic where you know you can definitely get on, so you don't have to do that.
Like, message the Facebook page or whatever.
But I can if you're in Melbourne and listening or watching this. Gorilla on a Wednesday. There's Voltaire in North Melbourne on a Friday. Mad Dog. In Footscray on a Tuesday.
Yeah. Like, it was the worst thing. And then, even after 3 weeks of build up to that one moment when you're finally in stage, I was like, there's no way this can go well now because I've thought about it for like...
How did that first gig go?
I got laughs. I remember my girlfriend came, Emily, and my mate who I did the radio set, Marty, came.
Yeah.
The mate I was doing. Yeah, because I was just doing started the radio with him. So him and Emily were there.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what I said. I think I made some joke about Back to the Future. I don't even know what I was talking about. Yeah. I honestly don't even have that material written down anywhere, I don't think. But yeah, it went okay. I don't think it went well. I think at the time when I got three laughs throughout 5 minutes or something, I probably got like a laugh a minute.
Man, that's...
Which now I'd be like, great. That's fucking tanking. Like, I go for like a laugh, like... You know what I mean? Unless I'm setting up a really big payoff, my stuff's quite punchy.
Yeah, right? But you can't compare your first gig to...
No, I know. Right, like, I'm trying to go for at least a laugh every 20 seconds now.
Yeah.
Or at least like a funny... Or at least a lead into a laugh, whatever, every 20 seconds. Yeah. But my second gig went bad, I think. One went really bad. I forget where it was. I bombed it at Smiling Politely in Northcote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, high street. Like the third... I was like the second or third gig just tanked real hard.
Did you ever have a moment where you're like, oh, I don't think I can do this?
Yeah, after that. I was like, I should quit.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I didn't have like a great time and I didn't know anyone. Like, because you don't know any people. Like, I met you, the first person I actually spoke to me at a gig.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I didn't really... I tried to spoke to people and they were like, yeah, cool. Because no one... And it now is... I always try and include the new guy.
Yeah.
Like, say if there's, like, a new guy who's just started open mics and I've seen him around a couple of times, I always go, hey, man, like, what's up?
Because it makes a difference, doesn't it? Because
I was that guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, I don't... And then, because I don't want people to quit just because they don't feel like they're included.
Yeah.
So I try and be, like, nice because you were, like, really nice to me. But now I realise you were just nice to me because you also had no friends. Because you were starting to...
Look at him calling me out.
Yeah. At the time, I was like, man, because you were so good. Like, you were so good. And I was like, this guy must be doing it for, like, at least a couple of years.
But, so, I... Coming back to the... Tommy, because now it sounds, like, weird.
Cause so, how long started, did you do it for? Before you stopped?
I reckon a few months.
And what year was it again? 2003?
No, 2003. Oh. Like, 2007?
Seven, right.
Maybe. So I was studying full time at Monash.
This is gonna make you feel like shit, but I was in primary school then.
That's awesome. That's very funny.
I just realized because the Commonwealth Games were in.
Well, why I was like at least confident but on stage.
I've seen a video of Joseph performing at Gotham Comedy Club.
Yeah, so,
in America.
Yeah,
in New York.
I can get there. I can tell you the story.
Yeah, go. I always wanted to know how you got that gig.
Okay, so I started doing stand-up, but I was studying arts law at Monash, and then I thought I'm just going to be a lawyer, but this is just... I'd done a lot of 21st speeches, and I thought that's the only reason I went to the Comics Lounge, because I'd had a good run of 21st speeches.
Man, I do my 21st bit, and it crushes there, so you were in good hands.
And so I was like, I should keep doing this, and... I did.
Jeez, that's cocky. I love it. But, like, it's such a different thing. Because I, you know what? 21st speeches are the opposite for me now. Because
you hate doing it.
No, because everyone knows what I do.
Yeah.
Like, and even if, and because of 21st, people's friends of friends have seen my videos online.
Yeah.
So everyone, this is like, sounds really arrogant, but not that people care that I'm there, but everyone at every 21st I go to goes, that's the guy from Facebook or whatever.
Do they get you to do a speech?
Yeah, so when I get asked to do a speech, like, and everyone goes, yeah, like, they're 8 beers deep, they're drunk, they're like, you should get up there and do a speech, man, it'd be so funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's an expectation then.
Yeah.
Because even if someone's accidentally funny, it kills at the 21st. If someone goes, yeah. Oh, one time I walked in on Sarah and she had her pants down and she was so drunk she doesn't remember, and it just crushes.
Oh, yeah.
But if I, like, I have to be fucking good because people are expecting it already to be
funny. Oh, really? So it's a harder crowd?
Oh, man, I hate it.
Really?
I avoid it. I've only done a couple at, like, my really close mates who I would have given a speech
anyway. Yeah.
That's the only time I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it just as like a, hey, Luke, get up there and do a couple of bits. Fuck no.
Yeah. Well, I guess I had a reputation for being a yarnsman even at that point. Yeah. But, so I did that, finished uni.
Law degree, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought, I guess I'll just work as lawyer, but I'd been doing...
Some degree dropping as well.
I thought I was going to do... I'd been doing theatre at uni as well, like at Monash Student Theatre, which is great if you're at Monash. And then I left after like a month to Sydney, and
tried working as an actor there. Then I moved to New York the year after and started training with the theatre company. And that's at some point there, after a few years living there, I was offered a play to do, and I couldn't do the play. And I'd been watching a lot of stand-up, and I thought, oh man, like, if I can't, because of my visa, I couldn't do this play. Mm-hmm. And like, I just want to get on stage. I should do some stand-up again.
So it was just like you wanted to perform.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, yeah, you just wanted to perform. Then was like, that's an outlet.
Well, yeah, I was there to be on stage. And so I was like, let me just use that. And I'd always loved stand-up. Even before the 21st things, I'd...
Who was the stand-ups that you enjoyed?
For me, Seinfeld was probably definitely the first time I'd been exposed to stand-up was Seinfeld. This is a funny story because I didn't even know what stand-up was, and we're buying birthday or Christmas presents for people in the family.
Mm.
And I forgot to get something for Dad, and we're at the checkout, and Mum was like, did you get something for your father? I'm like, no, I didn't get him anything. Oh, shit. She's like, quickly just get him something. And they had these cassette tapes of Jerry Seinfeld stand-up at the cash register.
Yeah.
And I just grabbed it. I was like, oh, I got him something. She's like, what's that? I'm like, oh, it's Jerry Seinfeld. Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to give that to your father? I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, yeah, this please. It was like a $10 cassette tape.
Right.
And
you listened to it heaps.
Well, I gave it to him. Like, Merry Christmas. And he was like, oh, thanks, Joseph. Idiot.
Yeah, I've never liked Jerry Seinfeld.
And he probably didn't know who it was. This was like in the mid-90s.
Wow. So yeah. Like, he wasn't even big.
Yeah, well, like, his TV show maybe just
started
for a few years in Australia.
Yeah.
But I didn't know who he was. And then one day, Mum and Dad had a big fight. Like, and there were four kids in our family.
Mm.
And we were in this Tarago. And no one was talking because Mum and Dad had had a fight. And Dad put the cassette tape in the car and started playing it. And
what's the deal with chips?
It was like, what's the deal with horses? And what's there in a monologue after the race? And they're going, I got my oak bag, I got my oak bag.
And everyone's just sitting there in silence.
Well, we were in silence, but Mum and Dad were like losing it. They were loving it.
Right.
And it was such like, for the kids in the family, it was such a relief.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, they love each other again. Oh,
thank God.
And
no, they don't. Just Jerry. It's like they love Jerry again.
They got divorced 5 years later. But the beautiful thing was that I was so appreciative and so curious about what the hell is this?
Mm.
That this guy was like able to like magically make them laugh.
He was like able to evoke a reaction from two people who've just been like really tense.
Beautifully said, Luke. Evoke a reaction from two people who've both been tense. That was perfect.
That's cool.
That was the first time I knew about.
And then Gotham.
So yeah, I was in.
Was that the first gig you did?
No. I'd done. Then I signed up for this workshop they had there. So I effectively paid for stage time.
I've heard that. So New York, that's why I never will go there to pursue stand-up.
You should go there to do stand-up.
I don't want to pay to get on stage.
You shouldn't do that, but you should. It's the stand-up there is so great. You would love
it. I will do it eventually. Yeah. Like, I'll go over just, you know. But I it's hard getting the right visa, because then if you get caught on stage and you're on a holiday visa, you can get deported.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Mate. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you can.
Caught on stage. You think they're...
Because that's my job.
Yeah.
So then, like, if I have to get a working visa...
But, dude, if you go there just for a holiday, you can still do spots.
Yeah, but if someone from, like, the whatever department is in the crowd...
First, they're not going to be in the crowd.
I know.
And even if they
are... But I've heard stories. It happened to Ashley Filsame.
What?
Yeah. He was stuck in Thailand for a bit because he couldn't get back into Australia. It happened to a friend of ours who is American. It happened to him in another country.
In Thailand?
No, like, I don't know. It happened, dude. It's happened. And Carla was telling me.
So let me just clear what you're saying. If you and me went to America next week for a week...
We'd have to have working visas or... Yes.
Liz, just chill. Dude, just chill. Look, If we went there next week for a week, we start going to see some comedy. We go watch comedy.
Yeah.
Then we're at a gig. They're like, you want to do a spot? You would say no.
You wouldn't be able to get paid.
Yeah, but would you do a spot?
I would. Because it's highly unlikely.
But you're not even getting paid, so it's not even as a like job. You can do a spot.
Yeah, you definitely couldn't get paid for it, though.
I don't know if they can see my eyebrows.
No, I'm telling you. Yeah. Caleb was telling me that...
But you'll do a spot.
That him and Neil went over.
But you would do an unpaid
spot. Yeah, I would. And then there were some issues with, oh, shit, we haven't got the right visas here. We can't actually perform anywhere.
But he has performed there.
He has.
Yeah.
But there were issues with it and getting the right visa in order to do so.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard country to get a working visa in. Yeah. If you've done anything wrong, if you've, like, pissed on a... near a playground before you're not getting on stage.
Yeah, it is hard.
Which, so now I'm fucked.
Oh, it's not that hard. It's just, there's a lot of issues.
Mate, if they go through my internet history, they steal this Smurf porn, and I'm like, I'm fucked. I get to customs, they're going to turn me back around.
But that was, I did do a spot at Gotham, because I did a 4-week workshop or something.
Yeah.
And then you could do a spot, and I did a few spots around that time. And then I came back to Melbourne, and I did a play. And when we were rehearsing for the play, the comedy festival was on.
Yeah.
And it would have been the same festival where you saw Nick Cody do...
So you stopped for ages?
I just did it because I wanted to get on stage.
And then you had no desire to actually pursue it.
I just wanted to be performing. Yeah.
And then you stopped for like how many years? Like,
Oh, then there was probably another year.
Yeah.
And then I was back here doing a play.
Yeah.
And it was during the play... where my character and a few others in the play were on death row.
Yeah.
And the director was like, if you, Joseph, if you, Luke, were on death row, and then for something you didn't do, and then you were released, what would you want to do? And I'm like, man, I just want to start doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, so you wanted to do it?
Yeah, and it was only through that question of being like, if all my...
What a pivotal moment.
It was, really. So, yeah, if all my freedoms had been taken away, and then I was released again, and I'm like... And that's when I decided, as soon as this play finishes, because I think it finished on June the 7th or June the 8th.
Yeah.
The next day, I started doing stand-up.
Wow.
And like you, since then, have been like all in.
Man, Joseph gigs an insane amount. You do like 4 spots a night sometimes.
Yeah, well, my most is 5 in a night.
5 in a night, yeah.
I could have been 6. One night, I was coming past that gig you were emceeing.
Yeah, I know.
And if I squeezed on there, I could have got to 6.
But, it was... So, Joseph's been... And you've never looked back. It's great. You probably gig the most out of anyone, really, on the Melbourne circuit.
Pete Jones gigs a lot.
Yeah. There are a few people who do a lot, but you're one of them.
Pete and Luca
Muller does a lot.
In
Melbourne, that's how you get good. That's why they're good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Over 300 a year.
See, I do 120 a year, usually.
But that's... Man, I feel like...
It's a lot, because I do radio at night.
We have this relationship as well, with an audience. And that's, like, time and energy.
It's a lot, because I'm juggling uploading and stuff, usually once or twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Two more things before we end the podcast. First thing is, I was on Joseph's podcast, right, which he released last week.
Yeah.
Returning Home with Joseph Green. Go check that out. Now, I've said in the past of this podcast, guys, that I was in a year 9 band that I would never, ever say the name of. Now, I only said this a few months ago. I was like, I'll never tell you guys. And people were hunting through old episodes of this podcast to try and find it. And I was like, I'll never reveal it. We recorded your podcast about 6 months ago, right?
It was a while ago.
And this was before it came up on my podcast. And me and Joseph, we were speaking about similar things. We were speaking about me being into music and being in a high school band. And I said the name of the original band in your podcast.
Yes.
And the other day on my Snapchat, and I hadn't listened to your podcast yet. I forgot what we talked about.
Yeah.
Right, it was a while ago. And I saw you upload it. And I got on my Snapchat story. I was like, hey guys, go check out Joseph's Green, Joseph's podcast. I was on there. It was a great chat. You'll love it. Go check it out. Right. And obviously a few people did, because I got sent a few messages going, bro, I know the band. Like, people are looking, sending me videos on YouTube.
Is that how you found out? People messaged you?
Yes,
about it.
People. And then I quickly went and listened to the whole episode, yeah, like a day later, and was like, fuck. And now I'm being roasted all week because people know about Sunday Heist, the year 12 band I was in, but there was a year like 9 to year 10 one, which is just, I don't think we even had an original song.
Can I say the title?
No.
Okay.
Go listen to Joseph's podcast.
Okay, thank
yeah,
you.
That's
yeah,
such a great reason to go listen. I'm not going to say the title. You're just going to have to go listen to Joseph's podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'm come just roast me during the week. Fuck you guys. All right. And the last thing is questions. All right? You ready?
Yes.
We'll answer one. This is from, I don't know if this is like, this would be a good one for you. Hi, Luke. Got some questions for the podcast. This is from Georgia that you're not going to answer. Well, I am, so calling your bluff. Feel free to make fun of me. I have no pride anyway. Great.
G'day, Georgia.
Anyway, I'm an Australian and I love a good snag. She must be really behind in the podcast and must have listened to an episode where I was just talking about snags. Anyway, question number one. I currently participate in theatre sports. Can that be a good lead into comedy? Well, that's exactly how Joseph got into it. Yeah. Not theatre sports.
What if theatre... This is like Space Jump and stuff?
That's just like... Theatre sports is like improv games,
yeah,
and... Yeah, perfect lead into comedy. It's how a lot of people start.
Yeah.
I would say.
Great comedy. I think Steen Raskopoulos.
Yeah.
He's a theatre sports man.
Perfect example of that.
Fantastic.
He was on the improv show Whose Line Is It Anyway? The Australian version?
Yes.
That's really the only thing we can answer for that. Yes, it is. Two, do you still follow that Instagram account, Inspiring Nipples? Oh, yes, from ages ago. Yeah, you're very behind, so you're not going to hear this for 6 months then. No, I don't. There's an old thing. I followed an Instagram account.
Inspiring Nipples.
Yeah, and they just posted pictures of, like, areolas.
Inspirational nipples.
Yeah, like, female or male, and you wouldn't know if it was female or male.
Oh, really?
Because it was just a nipple,
oh,
and the whole thing was like, oh, it doesn't matter what gender, it's just a nipple. It was like a free the nipple thing. And
do you
I
think
thought it
are
was...
nipples androgynous?
Well, yeah, what does that mean?
It means like sex, like that it could be man or
well,
woman.
Well, it's hair on it. You can tell.
Well, that's.
That's a bit of a giveaway.
But women have hairs on nipples, Luke.
Oh, really?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, not all. It's rare.
Not hairy, not
yeah,
as hairy. But if there's a hair.
Yeah.
There's
nothing wrong with that if you've got a hairy nip.
Yeah. So what are you saying?
Well, I'm just saying that, like, they were waxed nipples for either guys who go, so you couldn't tell, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, I forget
what... I reckon I could tell...
I forget what I was even 90, talking
99%
about.
Of the time whether
male
it's
male or
man,
female.
I reckon I could.
Man, I'm going to have to get this Instagram account.
Do you
was
know,
it called Inspiring Nipples? Man, I forget what it was called.
You think they're genderless. Nipples are...
Mate, I was probably saying what you were saying. I think I was saying at the time, this is fucking stupid. Why does this count exist? I think that's why I was talking about it.
Okay.
I don't remember. It was about a year ago. Anyway, no. What the fuck? Oh, she must be a lesbian, because she said, how does
that's,
I...
That's how you pronounce it.
How should I deal with homophobes? But she doesn't say she's a lesbian. You know, I don't really like this question, to be honest.
What's the question?
How do I deal with homophobes? Mate, you got to be a bit more situational than that. Okay, this is a bad example of a good question.
You have
right?
to... Just...
Shouldn't have read this email out. I just picked them randomly.
They're projecting their own fears onto you, so realise they've got their own problems they're dealing with, and love yourself, and allow their projections of fear and hatred to... wash over you.
See, this is why he's my self-help guru.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like, this is... I go to Joseph for every bus. I'm like, hey, man, mum got mad at me yesterday. What do I do? And he's like, move out, you piece of shit. All right.
If it's your mum or dad giving you the homophobia, then you should move out.
Well, she did say I have two... Oh! I get what the question is. Also, she's not a lesbian. How should I deal with homophobes... I have two mums, but she spelt two like not the two. She spelt the wrong two.
I have two mums.
Right, but
T-O
she meant
oh mums.
But she means I have two mums. Also, her mum's a lesbian, right? So she her people.
And she's homophobic.
No, how do I deal with homophobes? Because people obviously give a shit because their mums are lesbians. Well, literally the same advice. Those people clearly have problems.
Well, it's their own like narrow-mindedness about your mother's being together and trying to spend more time with people who are accepting and loving enough to accommodate.
Yeah. Don't hang out with those people. You shouldn't have to deal with them. Literally cut them out of your lives. That's pathetic. And the fourth question is, can you start comedy courses? Yeah, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, they've been popping up a lot. And, well, I have done once, so...
Would you recommend it?
But I wouldn't recommend it. I would say if you want to do comedy, the best thing to do is to go and watch comedy. And better than that is to just get on stage and just keep getting on stage. And the only good advice or good thing you can learn from comedy courses is to get on stage and where those stages are. And I'll repeat it again, Mad Dog on a Tuesday, Gorilla on a Wednesday, Voltaire on a Friday. They're all sign-ups. If you show up, you'll get on.
This is just Melbourne, and then other states is the Rhino Room in Adelaide. Perth, I know Lazy Susan's has a regular night.
Yeah, there's one on Tuesday.
I don't know much about Sydney. I know heaps of... Pat Doherty's running heaps of cool rooms. Just literally, there's a Facebook page in every single city called like either Comedy Rooms Hub or Sydney Open Mics. There's a Facebook page for each city. Go to your city's Facebook page. That's the best way to get into comedy.
And then meet other comedians. Look, here we are. You know,
this is what you do. This is another one about comedy. I should probably answer this while there's a comedian on here. Has anyone... Oh, okay, this is a weird one. Hi, Luke. Has anyone ever said you somewhat resemble 50 Shades actor... oh no, 50 Shades character Jamie and... Oh no, the actor Jamie Dornan, aka the guy who plays Christian Grey. Here's a side-by-side comparison. Speaking of, what's your opinion of the 50 Shades franchise? What do you think of people that watch the movies? This is a comparison of me and the guy. I don't think I look anything like the guy who plays Christian Grey.
Are you going to show this on the video?
Yeah, I mean, I could put it up. It's close to the camera, but I should just put it up on the screen. When editing it. But anyway, look up the guy who plays Christian Grey. I do look like every guy ever, except for that guy. Okay?
There's a little bit of a resemblance.
He's just white. That's fucking racist.
If you're standing in the doorway...
If you're standing and looking at us from a distance and you don't know what Christian Grey looks like, then you're like, oh, is that the guy? No, it's just Luke Kidgel. And what do I think of the people who watch those movies? I don't know, those people who need better taste in erotic fiction, I think.
I've never watched it.
Yeah, so I think people... I've heard that it's just the books are actually really bad writing. I've heard that it's super bad, like the author's just not a good author.
Then why? They're good at
They're really popular. Well, they're good at describing sex, but I don't think it's good at like... Like apparently she describes an orgasm for like 3 pages. So it's just for like people who are like weirdly horny and like... Don't watch enough Smurf porn. Clearly.
Yeah, I feel like... I don't know, this is confusing to me.
Well, I've heard that they're really bad literature. Like, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I feel like if you're so horny, I mean, there's so many other better...
Why are you reading a book? Have a wait and like, move on with your day.
I mean, have you heard of pornography?
Yeah. There are literally establishments that you can go to pay for
maybe
sex,
that's my own
instead of paying for
my
literature.
Own that's maybe that's my own narrow-mindedness though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you should no, but Joseph reads more often. Joseph doesn't even have a TV. That's how much you read.
I don't.
There, so you're not missing anything. Yeah. Anyway, so this is the comedy bit. Out of curiosity, what is the most prestigious comedy club / festival there is that nearly all comedians aspire to, and what is the Australian equivalent? Also, how do you get started in open mics? We've already answered that.
Yeah.
What do you think the most prestigious comedy
festival/
club? So, what's the most prestigious festival?
I would say...
There's 3 big ones.
I would say Montreal, Just for Laughs, is the most prestigious
comedy
festival in the world.
So, that's in Canada?
Yeah, that comedians would aspire to
and
get on.
Then Edinburgh in
Edinburgh Fringe Festival and Melbourne Comedy
Melbourne's
Festival.
Melbourne's the 3rd biggest.
Yeah.
Or...
But
probably just as big as Montreal.
The thing about Just for Laughs is that it's an invite-only festival.
Yes.
So that's what makes it...
Prestigious.
Prestigious.
But
Melbourne has its level of prestige or...
Yeah.
It's a very international festival and great to be part of.
Yeah, so I think Melbourne, we're fortunate that in Australia we don't really have to have Australian equivalent because we have a festival that's already so good.
And then there's Sydney Comedy Festival, there's Fringe Festivals. The most prestigious comedy club... in the world, I would say, it's probably The Cellar. The Comedy Cellar?
I would say the Comedy Store in LA.
Do you think?
Just because, like, oh, no. Traditionally, yes, the Cellar. Like, because that's where, like, you know, like, stories of, like, Dave Chappelle dropping it at 2 a.m. and then just fucking crushing.
Yeah.
Like, you were there the night.
I've seen that.
So yeah, Joseph was there. I don't know if you've watched, this is a super weird story. If you've watched Dave Chappelle's newest special on Netflix, he describes a night where a reviewer came to the Comedy Cellar.
And I was there.
And Joseph was in the crowd, and you might be like, oh, heaps of people there. It only seats 70 people or 90 people.
Yeah, something like that.
So, many people.
I don't even know if it was full. It was probably full at that point.
Joseph was there.
Yeah.
And he saw Dave Chappelle. Was that sick?
Oh, of course.
It was like the week before he did SNL, wasn't it?
It was the day of the election. It was the morning of the election. So, it was 1:30 a.m. and the booths opened that morning.
Right.
And it was at about 1:30. So, it was the last show of the night. They had 3 shows there at the Cellar. The MC was like, okay, we got a special drop-in guest. You might know this next guy from the Dave Chappelle Show. Give it up for Dave, motherfucking Chappelle.
Imagine if it was like a sub-actor from the Dave Chappelle Show.
And he's Gary like, Andrews from season 3.
And everyone's like, oh. Because you know what's funny? Like, in Australia, I've seen, like, you know, I've actually done it. I've been the guy to do it for. One time I was emceeing the Comic Slanger and Dave Hughes dropped in to do a spot.
Yeah.
And it's like the only equivalent of that in America. Like in America, like when Dave Chappelle must drop in, everyone must go fucking nuts.
Oh man, it was. And Naomi Campbell was with him.
Who's that?
Naomi Campbell?
Is that she a model?
She's a model. Yeah. Yeah. She's a supermodel, and they just walked in together, right. And he was so cool, and everyone just went bananas for him. So, it's a very. The whole acoustically and architecturally, the room is perfect for stand up as well, and it's just got such a rich history of like comedic legends.
Is that the best comedy club in New York? Because you've been to a few of them.
Yeah, I've been to the Store as well.
You've been to the Comic Strip.
I performed at the Comic Strip.
And you've done Gotham.
Yeah, and I performed at the Comic Strip last time I was in New York.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Bad man. That is a goal of mine, to go over there and do those rooms.
Yeah, that was really fun.
But I would say, of late, the Comedy Store is like the new kind of hype.
Well, it's a different... to.
It's LA. It's in a totally different place.
But also, it's very... like, the Comedy Store in LA, which is also brilliant, is it's a way bigger room.
Right.
Not as big as the Comics Lounge. It's probably 200.
Comics Lounge is one of the biggest comedy clubs in the world.
As far as size, yeah.
Like, size. It fits, like, 600.
Yeah.
And I've performed it when it's been full, and it's pretty electric. But like, amazing. And I always go, like, oh, you know, that's just in Australia. And then I found out that, like, in my head, because I was like, oh, we're Australia, we're so small, in my head, I'm like, yeah, when Chris D'Elia posts about the Comedy Store, he's performing in front of 1,000 people. It's just, like, 250 people.
Yeah.
In a row. It's not that
And those crazy. those nights are selling out every night. And the Cellar and the Store is always selling out.
And the Cellar does, like, 4 shows a night.
Yeah. Then there's also 3 or 4 rooms at the Comedy Store.
Wow.
Of all different sizes.
Right.
But the biggest is, you know, maybe 2.
Have you been to the Laugh Factory in LA?
No, I haven't. I was only there in LA for a few days last time I was there. And I just went to the Store both times.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because, like, the Store's kind of started to get hype around it because Joe Rogan, like, Chris D'Elia.
I mean, it's had hype around it for several decades.
But, like, yeah.
Mitzi Shaw, the owner and founder, just passed away last week.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what a bummer way to end the podcast.
The legend, Mitzi Shaw. But they're the most prestigious. I would say the Comedy Store and the Comedy Cellar are the two most prestigious places.
Because, like, Seinfeld's dropped in there. Everyone does. Like, all Kevin Hart. Yeah. Chris Rock.
You know, on Seinfeld didn't get passed at the Comedy Store in LA.
Yeah, they said no.
And Mitzi didn't pass him, so he didn't go back for years, for like 20, 30, 25 years.
Yeah, because if you don't know how the American comedy clubs work is, it's different to Australia. You audition to become like a regular at the comedy club.
Yeah.
In Australia, you kind of just like get asked to do it and then like you just keep... I don't know. It's
good just to hang out at the gigs. Just hang out. Let the people that work there know that you're there.
Yeah.
And do as many gigs as you
people
can.
People always think that I got, like, other comedians and stuff. Like, people think that the reason why I started getting spots at the Lounge was because of the online stuff.
Yeah.
When I'd spent 3 months before I even blew up online, like, there at 2 a.m. speaking to the owners, like, you know, like, just getting along, like watching all the shows.
Did you stuff. Really?
Yeah, man. Some nights stay there at like 2:30, speaking to Grant and Dan.
2:30.
Oh man, like and one night my Emily was with me, my girlfriend, and credit to her because she knew how bad I wanted a spot there, and she sat there. The show finished at like late, like 11:30.
Yeah.
She sat there for like 3 hours. I was like, hey, we can go, and she's like, nah. Stay, like, she knew how bad I want to spot there. And
Emily is great.
And Grant she's was great. Just, yeah, well, yeah, you guys would have met Emily at the shows. She does all my merch, and she's pretty much like my borderline manager for 3 weeks.
She is
every
the
year.
Brains behind Luke Kidgel.
She really is. Like, I don't know, it wouldn't be possible.
Last night was Luke's last show, but we're backstage, and he's like, oh, I don't have my watch tonight. Oh, well, that's annoying. And then Emily came in, and he said, oh, Em, I don't have my watch. She's like, yes, you do, Luke. It's here in your bag. He's like, no, it's not. And she just opened the zip. And she's like, here it is, Luke. Let me put it
she
on.
She puts it on, and I'm like, oh, cool.
And he's like, okay.
And then I don't have water. She's like, I've already filled it up for you. I'm like, oh, sick. Like, because before a show, I'm just thinking about the show. And then, like, she's like, yeah, your stuff's on stage, your water bowl's there, the stool's set up, you're ready to go. And I'm like, okay, great. I don't know what I'd do. I just rock up, the lights wouldn't even be on, and I'd be like, sorry, guys, we're just getting this sorted. But yeah, Emily's awesome.
She does great.
But yeah,
job.
She waited around for, like, till 2 a.m. in the morning once, and I felt so bad. And I was apologizing to her the whole time. She's like, nah, it's fine. She's like, you better get a fucking spot this. She was like, you bet, like, man, it was like,
you probably went to get the car and she probably had a word to Dan and yeah. Dan was like, you put him on.
Yeah, now. But yeah, and then like a month later, I got my first spot, which then, see, I actually did a spot there before I blew up, and then the You Don't Own Me video went huge, but I'd already done a spot there.
Yeah.
And I think other people on the scene saw video and direct correlation with me gigging regularly there.
Yeah.
But it actually happened before that.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh yeah, he did well, put him on again. Yeah. And then for months, they didn't know who I was, like, about the online thing until, like, Lewis was like, hey, do you know that, by the way, that, like, Luke has, like, 150,000 followers? And they were like, oh, really? Oh, cool. Well, great, man. We'll have you on more then.
Oh, great.
But, like, for months, they were like, yeah, dude. They thought it was, like, an open mic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, which I am. So, yeah.
Well, here we are.
Here we are. All right, Joseph, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's been a long episode today, but...
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What a chat.
Yeah.
Go check out Joseph's Green show at the festival, ladies and gentlemen. It's at Hairy Little Sister.
At 10:30.
So you've got till this Sunday. So, if you're listening this week...
April 22.
April 22nd. Would highly recommend. There's one bit of my show. I'm going to say it's the PowerPoint bit. That fucking kills me every time.
Oh, that's great,
and
man.
People came from my show to your show to watch it, like, one night.
Yeah.
And I got messages each night. People come and go, bro, the bit of Joseph's show. He's like, and I'm like, I know,
the PowerPoint?
I've seen it. Dude,
really?
It's fucking hilarious.
I've got heaps of ideas like that I'd like to do more.
Man.
I think my next show...
My mates were raving about that. I went with a couple of my mates to Joseph's one night after mine, and they were all losing their fucking minds over that bit.
Oh, great.
Hilarious.
That gives me confidence.
So, yeah, go check out Joseph Green's show at the festival, and if not, just go see next year if you're 6 months behind the podcast. Some people might be listening at next year's comedy festival, so...
Thank you. Come along, anytime.
Come on.
I'd love to have you there.
And yeah, also my tour, sold out Brisbane, I added a second show today, so we're doing a 9:30 p.m. show, a late show in Brisbane. That's pretty
cool.
Good. So thank you very much to everyone. Perth, there's only like 20 tickets left. Adelaide, I'm coming to you next. And then, yeah, just buy tickets. Cool. All right, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening.